Right, so readings from Daniel 6, as Dawn said, at page 845 in the Pew Bibles, and we're going to be beginning at verse 1. That's page 845, Daniel 6. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three chief ministers over them, one of whom was Daniel. The satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the chief ministers and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the chief ministers and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him, because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel, unless it's something to do with the law of his God." So these chief ministers and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever. The royal ministers, prefects, satraps, advisers, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce the decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room, where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. Three times a day he got on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." They said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." And when the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sunset to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, "Remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him. He could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. When Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him, because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. And this is God's word.
You find us in the series Missio Dei, the mission of God. And today we're looking at the mission of God in the public square. And we're in Daniel chapter 6. If you have your Bibles with you, it's on page 845, I think. Daniel chapter 6, so do please follow. I remember listening to a talk by Bill Clinton a few years ago. He was talking about the biggest lesson that he'd learnt in his life as a president. He was asked, what's the biggest thing the biggest lesson you took away? And he recalled the day that Nelson Mandela was released, 11th of February 1990. And he said, "I was sitting in my kitchen, at the kitchen table with my daughter Chelsea, our daughter Chelsea, she was 9 years old at the time, and Mandela walked from out of Victor Vister prison, and he walked down the long, dusty track. And I said to Chelsea, I turned to her and I said, don't ever forget this moment. That's the greatest man in the world. And he said, 2 years later, he was elected president of the United States of America. And he met Mandela, and he asked him this question. When you got into the car and you were driving back to Cape Town, what was going through your mind? You'd been incarcerated for 27 years, much of that in solitary confinement. Mostly it was all about your color. If anyone had a reason to bear a grudge, it was you. And what was going through your mind? And Mandela said, "Well, I was pretty overwhelmed, I have to say, but the one thing I couldn't get out of my mind was that you have to learn to forgive, and to forgive everyone, because that is the only way to find reconciliation," which was the only thing that I could think of. And Clinton said, those simple words are the greatest truth that I learned before, during, or after my time as president. And of course, there was a time when we all watched the news and we listened to the radio and we saw South Africa every day on the news, if you recall, in the 70s and 80s, and appalling tribal bloodshed and brutality of apartheid. And we looked at that and we said, well, this is never going to change. This is an impossible situation. In fact, some of us thought all of Africa would catch a light. But of course, God was in control, and he used this most unlikely of agents, Nelson Mandela. If you read his book, Long Walk to Freedom, he was the most unlikely person in one sense. But humanly speaking, God uses this man, and humanly speaking, it is Mandela's ability to forgive and to teach his whole nation, to set an example to the world about how to forgive, that's what sets him apart. And I was in South Africa with my wife just a few weeks ago, and it's unrecognizable now. You could not have predicted it. It's a rainbow nation now. It's still got its challenges, but it's an extraordinary change that has come to that country. And as I say, humanly speaking, it's because one man stood up and taught everyone else how to forgive. And Mandela, you see, when he was released back in February 1990, was already a national hero. 500,000 people waiting for him when he was released from jail. But it was when he looked his enemies in the eye and forgave them, and when he set up the Truth and Reconciliation Committees, and he said, "We will forgive, and we will find reconciliation," it was then that he moved from being a national hero to being a global icon. And if you walk up to people in the street today in Hartford and you say, who's the greatest person who's lived in the last 100 years, you're going to hear the same name: Mandela, 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 Mandela. And when he died at his funeral, kings, queens, presidents, heads of government all got on a plane and went down to South Africa to pay their respects to a man of the very humblest beginnings. And you see, every now and again, someone steps out onto the world stage who is exceptional. who is extraordinary in what they do. In this century, it was Nelson Mandela. And 2,500 years ago, it was Daniel. And by the end of this event that we're going to look at now, the whole world is talking about Daniel. You see it there in verse 25, 26. Greetings, says Darius. I command that throughout my empire, everyone should fear and respect Daniel's God. He's a living God. He'll rule forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed. His power will never come to an end. He saves and he rescues. He performs wonders and in heaven and on earth. He saved Daniel from being killed by the lions. And then we read verse 28. Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. Well, let's just get into this story and take away a few lessons. We're in the 6th century BC, and Darius is making his way around the world. He's conquered Babylon, and he adds it to his portfolio of properties, if you like, or countries that he's conquered. And the good news is that he's now pretty much in charge of the world. The bad news is that it's hard to run the world, and he needs people to do it for him. So he has quite a sophisticated setup, and he has 120 princes that he appoints, and he gives each of them an area, and their job is to make sure that there's peace in the land and to collect taxes and generally to rule their provinces. And above them, he has 3 presidents. And all the princes report into the presidents, and their job is to hear complaints and just to make sure the whole thing's running. So it's a pretty sophisticated setup. And there at the very top of the tree is Daniel, our man Daniel. And that's quite an extraordinary thing when you think about it, because Daniel was a captive, he was a Jew, he was in exile. By rights, he should have been an outcast. But he is so extraordinary, so accomplished, so able as a person, that he has risen to the very top of this pretty political setup. It is political, with 120 princes and presidents and governors and satraps and lieutenant governors. It's a complicated gig going on. And Daniel is very special indeed to be appointed solely on merit. Well, one of the problems, of course, is that although he's a super impressive person, and he's now, by the way, in his 80s, there's been no slip-ups. I mean, over the last 70 years, he was brought to Babylon when he was 10, he's now 80. He hasn't put a foot wrong. He doesn't falter. So far, so good. He's hugely impressive. But his big test is yet to come. This is a test that's so big, so daunting, that you wonder how anyone could possibly pass it. And that happens in life, I think, sometimes, doesn't it? There's a test in front of you so big that it threatens to overwhelm you. And the consequences for you and for those that you love and for those that you know potentially run on for the rest of time. How are you going to react in this particular situation? It's a crucial question. Those tests come every now and again. Well, as is often the way with people who are excellent and at the top of their game, they have enemies, and Daniel had his enemies. And they didn't like the fact that he'd risen to the top of the tree for whatever reason. Perhaps he's Jewish, he's in exile. But they don't like this, and they decide to get together and take him out. And a lot of plotting and scheming going on. It's pretty Machiavellian. And the difficulty they've got is that Daniel never puts a foot wrong. He doesn't do anything wrong. The honey trap doesn't work. He can't be bribed. He just doesn't slip up. And they watch him. And they watch him carefully, and they're all watching him, and he just doesn't put a foot wrong. And the princes know it, the supervisors know it, the governors know it, the deputy governors know it, the satraps know it, and crucially, Darius knows it. Everyone recognizes that this guy is faultless pretty much in the way he behaves. Daniel is untouchable. And then one of them comes up with a genius plan. It's genius. And they talk about it, and they take it to the king. We read about it there. And they say, look, we've all been thinking. And you know how you have this whole thing going on with all these countries and different people, different religions, different languages. And they kind of all know about you, but we're not sure that they buy into you quite as much as they might. So how about we do this thing, just a little thing, just like 30 days. And what we'll do is we'll have this law that just says that everyone has to pray to you. So like Darius is front and center. It's a kind of unifying thing that we're going to do. And for 30 days, you can't pray to anyone except or ask for anything apart from you. And it just puts you right at the center. We think that'll just be like unifying. We've had a chat, and that's what we'd like to suggest, O king. And the king says, well, yeah, I hear where you're coming from. I quite like that. It's not a bad idea. And they say, just one little wrinkle. We just think that just to focus everybody, it might be a good thing if you just have some pretty serious sanctions. We don't expect to use them, obviously, but well, had something like, you know, if anyone does actually pray to anyone else, then, I don't know, throw them in the lions or something like that. Just to, you know, it's not going to happen, obviously, but that could be good. And the king's like, yeah, okay, well, it's just 30 days. Yeah, we could just do that. Oh, and the other thing, by the way, we'll just do this thing with the law of the Medes and the Persians that we don't use very often. But that's that law that once you've made it, you can't back out. Just, you know, just so everybody kind of gets that this thing is serious. Anyway, Darius says, yeah, okay, I get it. And he signs the order. And it goes like this. Immediately after that, the word goes out. It goes out across Twitter, goes out across Facebook, goes out across LinkedIn. It's on Babylon Tonight, Darius Daily. It's out there. Everyone gets the word. And here's the order. For 30 days, you will not pray to anyone apart from Darius. You have been warned. You do that, you die. I always think it's a little bit like when you're coming into Singapore and into Changi Airport, there's a very nice, gentle voice that comes over the tannoy and just says, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you get your train to the upright position as we're shortly going to be landing in Changi Airport. If you're found in possession of Class A drugs, there's a mandatory death sentence. We hope you had a nice flight. And it's something like that. That's the word that goes out. I mean, when everyone learns that the order's been signed, you can imagine in the streets of Babylon and they're talking to each other, they have a chat. So you heard about the order? Yeah, I heard about the order, but yeah, what do you think about it? Well, that's okay. I mean, I'm all over King Darius. He's a great guy. We're very happy to pray to him for 30 days, only 30 days. Someone else says, well, look, sometimes I don't even pray for 30 days, so it's going to be fine, you know, fine with me. Everyone's okay with the order. For 30 days, there is no prayer going to anyone apart from Darius. And one person reacts differently. We read that when Daniel learned that the order had been signed, he goes home, he goes upstairs, he opens his windows, he faces Jerusalem, and he prays to his God, not once, not twice, but three times a day. The entire world is shivering in fear under the rule of Darius Kim Jong-un. All prayer to anyone, anywhere, stops dead. Bang! Silence. One person, Daniel, goes home, opens his windows, turns towards Jerusalem, prays to his God once, twice, three times a day, just as he's always done. Now, why would Daniel do this? Crazy. Why would you do that? Certain death. Madness. Why would you do a thing like that? Well, it's a good question. And the answer is that he has faith in his God. His God has not let him down day by day for the last 80 years, and he knows that he will not let him down now. And Daniel would have been very familiar with these words from the book of Isaiah, which are written about this time. Isaiah 49, verse 15. Isaiah asks this question, very powerful question. Can a woman forget her nursing child? I mean, what a thought. Can a woman forget her nursing child or not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yes, God says, even these may forget, but I will not forget you. Behold, I have inscribed you on the palms of my hands, says God. Your walls are continually before me. What walls? The walls of Jerusalem, which were crumbling, which were in ruin. Everyone thought God had forgotten about them. God says, your walls are continually before me. If you're a Christian this morning, maybe your life hasn't gone according to plan. The walls seem to be crumbling. They're in ruins, perhaps. Maybe it's a surprise that you even find yourself here this morning. God says, your walls are continually before me. Your name is inscribed on the palms of my hands. They're right in front of me, right there. I'll never forget you. As far as Daniel is concerned, there is one God, and he is in his hands. In the 1970s, Romania was under the control of a tyrant by the name of Nicolae Ceaușescu. Some of you may remember that. And he imprisoned a lot of Christians, including one Baptist minister whose name was Joseph Ton. And Joseph Ton somehow escaped, and I heard him speak. I was pretty young at the time, but I heard him speak in 1977. I think I was about 14. And he was at Westminster Chapel down in London, and he was speaking. It was a packed church, 3,000 people in there listening to him speak about what it was like to be in jail in Romania under Ceaușescu. And he talked about having a good eye, a good eye. And maybe it's a Romanian expression, but a good eye, he said, is when with God's help you can see beyond the immediate crisis, beyond the waves that threaten to overwhelm you. You can see your way right out to the horizon. You can see God in control. And he told the story of how he was, how the secret police picked him up, took him to prison. They tortured him pretty badly. They beat him up. And he's in jail. And one day, a guard bursts in and puts a gun to his head. Guard's in a very bad mood. The gun is loaded. And he says, "Ton, I am going to shoot you dead. Renounce your faith now, or I pull the trigger." And Ton said, he wasn't joking, he was deadly serious. They shot a lot of people those days. As far as I was concerned, this was it. And he had the trigger pointing at his head, he had the gun pointing at his head, and he said, I looked at him in the eye, and I said, "When you threaten to shoot me, you threaten me with glory, and you can't threaten me with that." And he held his gaze. "When you threaten to shoot me, you threaten me with glory. You can't threaten me with that. Do what you will." The guard put his gun back in his holster and walked out. And Joseph Ton said, that's a good eye. The Lord gave me a good eye. I could see beyond the immediate danger right out to the horizon. Daniel has a good eye. 3 times a day he goes home. He goes home and prays 3 times a day under immense pressure. Well, it's a great result for Daniel's enemies. Fantastic. Doesn't get any better for them. This is exactly the plan. It's how it's supposed to play out. And so they go back to the king, and they say, "O king, live forever. You remember that law that you came up with, that we came up with a couple of days ago that we didn't think we were going to need? Huh. Well, it's a little bit like this. Daniel, who is an exile and a captive from Judah," they just put that in just to make sure that the king recognizes that Daniel's not, no one special. But of course, the king knows exactly who Daniel is. He's a CEO, for goodness sake. He knows exactly who Daniel is. "Well, Daniel doesn't obey you. He doesn't respect you. And he's broken your law. In fact, he did not just once, twice. He did every day. He's just, you know, he's making a mockery of the whole thing." And you remember that law? And the king says, yeah, I remember the law. You mean the one that, it's like, you can't, the law of the Medes and Persians thing. He says, yeah, exactly, that one. And in a moment of crystal clarity, Darius recognizes and understands that he's been set up. There's nothing he can do. He's signed an irrevocable law. And if there's one thing about an irrevocable law, it's irrevocable. And so the king's in a cul-de-sac, and he's trying to reverse out, and there's smoke coming off his wheels, and he's spinning, and he's trying to get out of it, but he can't. Whole day goes by, and by the end of it, he recognizes, checkmate, he's done. Daniel's done for. And the king has to give the order. We read about it, right? And the king has to give the order, and Daniel is thrown into the lions, and it's all sealed up, and the king puts his seal on it. And the king says, "Daniel, may the God whom you serve so loyally rescue you from the lions." Well, the king goes back to the palace. He can't sleep. He can't eat. He turns off his all the music. He shuts it all down. Doesn't go online. Turns off the Wi-Fi. Doesn't even check his texts. It's really bad. He's in a very bad situation here, and all night he can't sleep. And then the next morning, this is the emperor. This is the king of the world. This is the guy who runs Babylon. In his pajamas, he sprints down to the den. And he puts his ear to the den, and he's like, "Daniel," he's not expecting. I mean, his heart must have been pounding in his chest, you can imagine. He puts his ear to the den, he's, "Daniel, has your God, whom you serve so loyally, been able to preserve you from the mouth of the lions?" Silence. You're not expecting to hear anything anyway. And you can just imagine as he starts to turn away, and he's in bits. How could he have been so stupid? And then out of the silence, he hears a voice. "May your majesty live forever." You can just imagine, he stops dead in his tracks. God sent his angel to shut the mouths of the lions so that they would not hurt me. And he did this because I have done you no wrong, your majesty. And I was innocent. The king can't believe it. I'm guessing nor can his enemies. And the king brings Daniel up out, and then much to their chagrin, he takes all the enemies, the princes, the presidents, the lot, and as was the way, chucks them all in, and they didn't do things by halves in those days, so their wives, their children, the whole lot, everyone goes in a little detail. They don't even hit the bottom before the lions are all over them. This is real Kim Jong-un stuff. This is serious stuff. And around the entire world, one name is ringing out. Daniel. And Daniel's God. Because the fact is, when people do the right thing, people sit up and notice, don't they? You see that? Just last week, Stephen Sutton. Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Smiling, giving the thumbs up with hours to live. I mean, extraordinary. He thought he was going to raise £10,000. That was the biggest amount that that 19-year-old boy with terminal cancer thought he was going to be able to raise. Maybe, just maybe, £10,000. And yesterday, £4 million. £4 million. Because we recognize exceptional people. And it chokes us up when we hear it. It's so inspirational. Can't get our heads around it. God calls us to be extraordinary, to be like Daniel. How does that happen? How can you be like Daniel? Or Danielle? I don't know if you ever use LinkedIn. It's a platform for the professional industry, I guess. Perhaps currently there's something trending. Lots of leaders go on there, business leaders, and they share their thoughts and quite interesting blogs and stuff to read. There's all kinds of stuff on there. Anyway, one of the things that's trending at the moment is called "If I Were 22." If I Were 22, and there's a bunch of CEOs and CFOs and important people who've written, "If I Were 22." What stuff that I wish I'd known when I was 22. Now I'm 50, 55. I just wish someone had told me this stuff when I was 22. And it's interesting to read, to find out. You know, now that you've learnt it all, if I were 22, what three things do I wish I'd known? Well, they don't come much more experienced than Daniel. He's CEO of Darius Inc. He's running the whole show. And if you and I want to be Daniel, then there are just a few lessons from his life as we close. I just want to just run through. One is that he's a man of prayer. He's a man of prayer. It was his custom to pray three times a day, and he didn't care who knew it. He prayed looking towards Jerusalem. Why? Because he was telling everyone, "I'm not from here. I'm from somewhere else." It wasn't an accident that he faced Jerusalem. And not Darius, not the presidents, not the princes, not the satraps, not the governors, not the lieutenant governors. None of them are in charge of my destiny. The God of Israel is in complete control. And all the great men and women of Scripture pray. Everyone, without exception, they all pray. And sometimes we say to ourselves, "Well, I don't know what to, you know, I haven't prayed for a while. Why not? I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I don't know what words to use." And the Bible is full of beautiful prayers that you can use. And there's one of my favorites. There are a few, but here's one: Psalm 139. I thought I'd just share this with you. It's a great prayer. If you don't know what words to use, here's a prayer. It's a beautiful prayer. "Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down. You know when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path, my lying down. You're acquainted with all my ways. You know me inside out. Even before a word is on my tongue. Behold, O Lord, you know it all together. You hem me in behind and before. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot comprehend it." That's a beautiful prayer right there. Psalm 139. That's just the opening verses. Daniel's a man of prayer, but he's also a man of faith. We saw that Daniel had a good eye, but actually just a few years before this, Darius's predecessor, or one of the emperors back, was Nebuchadnezzar. And he pulled a very similar stunt. Seems they weren't very imaginative, these Babylonian emperors, but he did pretty much the same kind of thing, where he builds this huge gold statue, and it's 90 foot high, and he commands the whole world. He says, "Right, this is how it's going to play. The next so long, you're all going to bow down to this golden image, this golden statue. And if you don't, you're going to get thrown into a fiery furnace." And I like the way they describe it as a fiery furnace, because your basic furnace wasn't going to be hot enough. So this was going to be like a fiery furnace. Nebuchadnezzar commands everyone everywhere. The whole world is flat on its face in front of this 90-foot statue. And three men stand up: Meshach, Shadrach, Abednego. They refuse to bow down. Flattened faces everywhere. And one, two, three men refuse. They're all Daniel's friends. They all graduated from the same class at school, and Nebuchadnezzar is furious. He's livid. And we read there, Daniel chapter 3, furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So these men were brought before the king. Nebuchadnezzar says to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, that you don't serve my gods or worship the image of gold I've set up? Now, here's how it's going to go. When you hear the music, you hear the sound of the zither, the harp, the pipes, and all the kinds of music. If you're ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into a fiery furnace. Then what God's going to be able to rescue you from my hand?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king. This is great. This is a great response. They replied to the king, "O king, know this. If we are thrown into the fiery furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude towards them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than normal, and commanded some of his strongest soldiers to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men were in their robes, their turbans, their clothes, their trousers, and everything else were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. And the king's command was so urgent, and the furnace was so hot, that the three soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were all killed because it was so hot. And so these three men, thrown into the fiery furnace, and there they are. Well, God rescues the three men, and they come out of the fiery furnace completely unharmed, if you know the story. They don't even smell of smoke. That's how complete the rescue is. But you notice, here's the key point. When they're talking to Nebuchadnezzar, they say to him, "Our God's able to rescue us, but know this, even if we perish in the flames, we're still not going to change our mind." That is extraordinary faith. That's some courage. And Daniel has the same faith in the same God, and he doesn't blink for a moment. He hears the order, and he goes home, he goes upstairs, opens the windows, turns towards Jerusalem, and he prays 1, 2, 3 times to his God. He's a man of prayer, and he's also a man of faith. And finally, he's a man of habit. When Daniel heard the order, he went home as he used to do, something that he used to do on a regular basis. He always did this. Like clockwork, it's not a one-off. In fact, we're told this was habit. He's been praying for years, and he's not about to stop now. And God takes care of him. He sends an angel. I love this. When I was a child, my mother read me this story. You know, this is a great story. When you're 5 or 6 years old, this is compelling stuff. And it's compelling stuff at any time you hear it. But I remember listening to my mother reading this story to me, and I remember being very choked up about this picture. Here is this frail old man on one side of the lion's den, and on the other, a pack of killer, man-eating lions. I mean, think of the odds. Daniel, 80 years old, bunch of lions on the other side, and into the middle steps God, sending an angel who says, "You will not touch him. You will not touch him." And he turns the lions into a pack of cowering, purring kittens. It's astonishing. It's an amazing thing that God does for Daniel. He's a man of prayer. He's a man of faith. He's a man of habit. And the whole world knows it. The whole world knows about Daniel and his God. And the question for you and for me is, how can I be Daniel? How can you? In your place of work, in the public square, out and about, with princes and emperors and presidents and lions, as it were, all arrayed against you. How do you stand up and be the ultimate example of what it means to be a follower of Christ? Because that's when people take notice. If you're following the case at the moment, the whole world is watching that lady, Maryam Ibrahim Ishaq, down in a Sudanese jail. Everyone's watching. She stands there for her faith, no different to Daniel, in her own way. Well, I don't know about you, but I find it very daunting, actually, to be measured on the Daniel scale. I fall very, very short on that scale. I mean, we're talking here about one of the most extraordinary individuals in the Old Testament, in the Bible. And there's quite a lineup. If you think about all the greats, Abraham, Moses, Joshua, Elijah, Solomon, Samuel, Isaiah, Esther, Job, David, that's a serious lineup. And Daniel's right, he's right up there. He's right up there. He's the finest model of personal integrity and godly living. He's at the very top of his game, and it's clear for everyone to see. And the reality is that we don't measure up. We don't even come close to Daniel, let alone to what God requires. Not even close. But we do have help. That's the great news this morning. We have help. Because Daniel foreshadows the ultimate man, Jesus of Nazareth. He's actually a pale imitation of Jesus. As Jesus steps into our shoes, he lives the life we should have lived. He takes the punishment that we deserve. 2 Corinthians 5:21, God made him who had no sin to be sin for us so that we might become the righteousness of God. God is working his purpose out, my friends. He has a plan. There is a grand plan, and we have to decide what role we're going to play. We're going to play in it. And when we stand up, and when we step out, like Daniel, then he uses us to draw men and women to himself. We sang the song earlier, didn't we? Set our church on fire. Set your church on fire. Win this nation back. This is how it happens. This is the way. Well, Jesus is here in the preaching of the word this morning. Maybe you don't come to church very often. Maybe you're just here visiting. He's here this morning. You can find him at the cross. He reaches out to you in the preaching of his word. He says, I'll have dealings with you. Will you not reach back? Who knows when the opportunity will come your way again? Beneath the cross of Jesus, I find a place to stand, and I wonder at such mercy that calls me as I am. For hands that should discard me hold wounds which tell me, come. Beneath the cross of Jesus, my unworthy soul is won. Well, let's close and sing those words now.